Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome to Noise in Brief, PR Week UK's fortnightly podcast series, where we discuss the biggest industry news stories from the past week in a bite-sized format. I'm John Harrington, editor of PR Week UK. I'm joined today by reporters Eliza Radu and Evie Barrett. Hi to you both.
Hello.
Hello.
Before we get stuck in, I want to give a little plug to some upcoming PR Week conferences. We have PR Week's PharmaComms conference on 21st of March, and on the 8th and 9th of May, we host our huge PR360 conference in Brighton. Visit prweek.com to book your places. All right, before we start talking about things in detail, last week saw the launch of the PR Week UK Power Book. You might have seen the coverage on PR Week over recent days. We had a drinks reception in Soho, which was very nice, at 100 Wardour Street. We'll be discussing the project in length in a future podcast. So I just wanted to say congratulations to everyone in the book. Thanks for taking part, and to everyone for coming along. Eliza, unfortunately, you weren't able to make the party. Evie, did you have a nice evening?
Yeah, it was really nice to see some familiar faces and also meet people who I'd only ever seen their headshots before. It was a kind of a nice mixture of people. Yeah, did a lot of networking.
Yeah, it's good to see some people we don't necessarily talk to as much. And you know, sometimes introduce them to other people in the industry who they don't necessarily know. It's a nice mix of people who know each other and are networking, you know, sort of being in touch again, and also, you know, meeting new people. So yeah, lots of fun. So stay tuned to the many, many PowerBook articles on the website that will continue throughout March. But we're going to start with the bizarre saga of the Princess of Wales and the doctored photo, which has become a huge story this week with many comms and media professionals wading in. To recap, in recent weeks, rumours had swirled about the whereabouts and welfare of the Princess of Wales, who the palace said had been recovering from surgery that she had in January. On Sunday, Kensington Palace released a Mother's Day photo taken by Prince William, apparently, of Kate and the three children. Some commentators allege the photo had been doctored. I, and many others, I'm sure, saw this as a weird conspiracy theory and went along with our lives, until news agencies, including the Associated Press, Reuters and Getty Images, all issued so-called kill notices on the photo, which is advice not to use it. AP said, it appears that the source has manipulated the image. Now, this sent conspiracy theories into overdrive, and in an unusual move, Kate posted on the royal couple's own account. Like many amateur photographers, I do occasionally experiment with editing. I wanted to express my apologies for any confusion the family photo we shared yesterday caused, she said. Cue confusion and more bewilderment. Some were questioning whether Kate was using Photoshop while recovering from surgery. And yeah, there was just a lot of talk, like an absolute overload, really, of gossip and so on. The whole saga, which is, you know, not over, suggests a total change of policy from the royal media teams, which traditionally have gone by the mantra, never complain, never explain. Now, the palace could have done that, said nothing and ignored the rumours. It initially said Kate would step back from official royal duties at least until after Easter, so they could have stuck by that line. But moving beyond the kind of royal situation, I think it shows the temptation for anyone in comms to act quickly to try to curb largely social media rumours. And I think it also, in addition to that, shows the danger of doing so in a seemingly rushed and perhaps slapdash way that actually makes the situation worse. So, lots to talk about here. Evie and Eliza, what do you both think about the situation and what are PR and media professionals saying about it?
The royal family attempted to address the rumours about Kate's health, but their attempt ended up causing more speculation. This kind of resulted in hashtags like Photogate, Kate trending on social media platforms with thousands of people expressing their criticism towards the family's like strategy. I think people are seeking the truth, particularly because the king was quite transparent about his cancer diagnosis. I think the lack of clarity around Kate's absence only fuels further speculation, which I don't really think is beneficial to them or anyone else.
Yeah, the speculation has just escalated hugely. I'd previously seen quite a few jokes online about Kate's whereabouts, but now it's just on a whole nother level. I think the whole Mother's Day photo thing just wasn't thought through properly, and whoever edited that picture, whether it was Kate or not, I'm not sure, I believe it was, but they have a lot to answer for because they're trying to be more open, but all it's done is cause a bigger issue.
I think the numerous conspiracy theories that have emerged could have been resolved if the issue was addressed. It's bizarre that after the backlash that they didn't publish the original photo or even explain beyond that vague statement on how or why it was edited.
I do think it comes down to kind of a change in the way that the royal family's seen and a way that they behave. They're sort of used to being seen almost as ethereal and sort of not being questioned. But nowadays, everyone has a higher level of media literacy. So things like an edited photo are going to be called out if people don't feel like they're genuine. This situation demonstrates how people online can kind of conspire and investigate when something feels off. And obviously the royals are an exceptional case because they're so much under a microscope. But I think the wider industry should take note of this because something similar could happen to any high profile brand or figure. As well as sort of a rising conspiracy theorist, which has obviously fueled this. In some ways, I feel that high level of scrutiny could be linked back to big figures like Taylor Swift and her fandom because they really think they are detectives. So she has to be hyper aware of her every move. And she sort of plays into that, plants tiny details everywhere for her fans to discover. And I think that's kind of evolved internet culture to the point where young people on social media see everything through this lens like a game and can't help but theorise. I think the difference with Taylor Swift is she knows how much attention people pay and doesn't underestimate their ability to connect the dots. So I think everyone else kind of needs to be wary of
that.
Yeah,
it's interesting, isn't it? It's kind of, we think back to what the palace used to be like, so closed, so sort of reluctant to release statements on things. And there does seem to be under the current king a sense of changing this policy. You know, as you say, he's been open about his cancer diagnosis and, you know, using that as a way to sort of give support to people who've gone through similar experiences and kind of getting the positive PR, if you like, from that. And it feels like maybe there were kind of trying to do a similar kind of approach here. But it's interesting because you could argue that what they were trying to be was authentic. The fact that, let's say, Kate was doing this, it looks like more of a homely, authentic thing because, you know, probably many people listening to this have kind of done slightly bodged jobs on Photoshop before when they're trying to touch up a family photo or whatever it is, or indeed a work-related one. And it's kind of a human thing to do. So maybe there is that sense of, actually, let's not be too slick with this and let's be a bit more grounded, which seems like a contradiction in terms when you think about people who live in palaces. But nevertheless, you can sort of see kind of the logic there. So I think that's a real danger when that goes wrong. But I also think it kind of relates to, you know, we talk a lot about AI-generated fake images. They're definitely going to cause a lot of work for PR people. I mean, this is an unusual case because most fake images are produced by other people to sort of create a fake view of a certain situation. Whereas this is the other way around. It's apparently something that's been doctored by them themselves. Yeah, it's a strange take on the situation, but it definitely shows the downside of the royals trying to embrace clarity and try to stem social media rumours, particularly in this instance. I struggle to see how it's worked in any way.
I think it's really unfortunate timing with the whole age of AI. Everyone kind of assumes the worst, assumes that this picture's been completely generated by technology and that, like, they kind of go to place where, like, oh, Kate's unwell or, like, kind of really, really serious stuff when the reality is probably, like you say, that it's just gone through Photoshop and just gone wrong. But I think unless the palace is going to sort of explain that and show the original image, then I can't see how it's going to go away.
Yeah, it's a difficult one, isn't it? You wonder if in a way they've sort of opened the Pandora's box a bit about being open, and maybe they need to go back to a bit more of the don't explain, don't complain. But it's a funny one, you know, on podcasts like this, talking about the Royals, because, you know, most people who work in comms won't go through the don't complain, don't explain strategy for obvious reasons. It probably doesn't work if you're talking about, you know, fast moving consumer goods or a bank or something. But nevertheless, I do think there are kind of general lessons around crisis comms and social media rumours and doctored images. But, you know, it's one we'll keep watching with interest, definitely. Okay, we're going to talk about industry issues next. But first, here's a message from our partners.
The Campaign Podcast is your twice-weekly navigation through the sometimes rocky waters that surround Adland. Every Tuesday, we bring you a roundup of the biggest news stories and look forward to what's happening in the industry over the coming days, delivered in Campaign's spirited but authoritative style. Each Thursday, we take a deeper dive, unpicking issues and hot topics or celebrating initiatives in events like Cannes Lion, Mental Health Week and Black History Month, with studio guests, exclusive interviews and longer form features. You can find it now wherever you get your podcasts. Hope to see you there.
Okay, last week brought news of an interesting acquisition. MHP Group snapped up a creative agency called Studio La Plage, which adds 30 people to its London operation. La Plage has an interesting background. It was actually founded in 2011 as an art gallery, later opening a studio where it began producing creative work for ad agencies and directly for brands. MHP boss Alex Big told me the acquisition was, quote, driven by clients wanting different ways of telling stories. There's been a lot of acquisitions recently, but I think this is part of a growing trend of agencies looking to sort of beef up their studio, video, image production capabilities. Late last year, Freud's bought an agency called Lawless Studio, whose USP was communicating messages through art. And just another example, last week we had a story from the brand strategy and comms agency Bold Space launching a film production arm. So adding these kind of things, I don't think it's new as such, but I do think clients are increasingly wanting them as part of the blurred line between corporate and consumer comms. The three agencies I mentioned all combine sort of corporate and consumer comms, and I've heard of at least one major corporate agency that's actively looking to buy this kind of specialism. So what do you both think about this?
Yeah, it's quite apparent that agencies are wanting to make acquisitions to sort of boost their creativity beyond the traditional realms of PR. It seems to me that a lot of comms services are being integrated rather than seen in separate funnels. So kind of innovation is the thing that brings them all together. I've spoken to agency bosses who also said they're interested in acquiring social media or influencer agencies and wanting to shift the narrative there, because I think it's the kind of discipline that might often sit under a marketing budget rather than a PR one. The logic seems to be that if a comms agency can bring more of this solid creative expertise to the table, whether that's through social media or film production, like you mentioned, any of those kind of comms adjacent services, and if they can then add value to the PR strategy as a result, then it's likely to sort of claw back some of the overall budget and prove PR's worth.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? You mentioned kind of going to the sort of where the marketing budgets sit. And for a while, that was the kind of holy grail for a lot of agencies, going, you know, to the sort of CMO and trying to get some of that. And I don't think that sort of hope has kind of left, although I guess you could also argue that with the sort of beefed up corporate affairs functions that we've seen in the last maybe 5 years or so, the kind of the value of corporate is also very high. But it's definitely interesting to see how that has developed, and the sort of the kind of video image production side is still very much valued. But yeah, Eliza, what do you think?
I think acquisitions have proven to be an effective way for companies to diversify, be that geographically or otherwise. I've recently spoken to a few founders who believe in like the acquisition of knowledge, the idea that partnering and merging with another business can help you with your weak points. We've seen so many of this in like recent months with some of the examples that John and Evie both listed. There are also quite a few compelling financial reasons for businesses to come together. If done correctly and integrated well, these mergers can benefit everyone within the agency and help scale up and grow the business.
Yeah, that's true. I guess the sort of the challenges, and this probably goes talking about sort of acquisitions generally, and let's face it, at the moment we've got the biggest one of the current era going on in WPP with the BCW and H&K merger. There are a lot of challenges too, right? Physically sort of amalgamating teams, bringing them all into the same office, what's going to happen with different roles and so on. And then if you're also adding to that the sort of the acquisition costs, you know, that's going to have an impact on margin in the short term. So kind of growth by acquisition has its benefits, but it has challenges too. But yeah, I mean, the acquisitions in the industry have not slowed down, and I've spoken to a few people who seem keen to make acquisitions still. So we'll see what happens. And this will definitely be an interesting thing to look at when our top 150 research comes out. So watch this space. Finally then, recent weeks have seen a return of a popular campaign trope. Of course, I'm talking about floating something big down the Thames. Evie, you've been looking at some recent floaters. What's going on?
Well, we saw a Thames campaign a few weeks ago when the skincare brand The Ordinary floated a giant bottle through London. That got some attention, and Taylor Herring's boss, James Herring, then made a collage of some famous Thames floaters of the past.
I love that.
Which gave people a chance to reminisce fondly on that sort of work. Most people acknowledge that it's a bit of a cliche approach nowadays, but it then started a conversation on whether that means brands should avoid floating things down the Thames, or if it's a sort of immortal campaign type that we'll continue to see, even if just in the name of nostalgia.
I think floating objects down the Thames has always been a predictable PR strategy, but what's even more predictable is like people complaining about it. I think this method has been proven to be effective because it reaches consumers, it's fun, it's quirky, and it makes it enjoyable for people. I think some of my favourite Thames floaters are the Burberry Olympia bag from 2021 and the floating house from Airbnb in 2015. I think despite people's disapproval, the media still finds it interesting and effective. Just take a look at the tabloids. There's no need to change a formula that works.
I'd like to see some research actually on how successful the more recent ones have been, because I mean, it's hard to know, isn't it? Unless you're there sort of looking at the data and looking at how that translates into sales and so on.
I do think there's a correlation with earned media, though, because people are talking about it, even with the Ordinary bottle Evie was talking about. I remember seeing posts on social media when that emerged, and there was a lot of buzz about, oh, why was this created? What's this brand? Some people thought it was Tippex, which I thought was quite funny. But after a little bit of research, they looked into the brand The Ordinary. And I think that's quite good from a business standpoint, because more people are looking into your brand.
There's also the environmental point. I don't think it's very sustainable to create a giant plastic structure like that. And I've also heard that they can't very often be recycled because they're coated in chemicals to make them weatherproof, which must deter a lot of brands and agencies which are trying to think about their sort of green credentials.
Looking into the future, I think we'll see a lot of agencies using creative tools like AI instead of floating physical items down the Thames. We've already seen this technology be used with a few campaigns, and given the cost, the extensive permissions and permits, and the environmental challenges, I think it would be unwise not to explore these options.
Yeah, just this week, wasn't there a bra on Tower Bridge?
Yeah,
from M&S.
An M&S one. And there was also, I don't know if it was on the Thames, but there was a Pepsi CGI. They're interesting and they're amusing for now, but I do wonder how quickly people will get bored of these things if they're not actually physical, because I think part of the appeal is the shock factor of actually seeing one of these things in real life kind of spontaneously.
I wonder if there's a sort of broader point about the PR industry's sort of creative reputation, because one of my concerns, you know, regardless of whether individual campaigns sort of hit their KPIs, does it just look like we're not as creative as other disciplines, frankly? I think this is the danger, and it's something that a few people have pointed out, that really, you know, this is an industry that's invested a lot in sort of creative firepower in recent years. And early on, I was talking about studios and, you know, all that sort of stuff, to then kind of bring this kind of thing out. Is there a sort of a wider problem there in terms of the industry's own reputation? Or if it shifts units, does it matter?
Just because something has been done before and done quite a lot, I don't think it takes the creativity out of it, because there are always new ways to experiment. And depending on like the brand and who you're trying to target, floating something like, do you remember the PG Tips Monkey floating down the Thames? I think that still captivates people because it was quirky and it's unusual. I know we see things floating down the Thames a lot, but that's because we're very adjacent to the comm space. But as an ordinary consumer, how often would you see that?
I think the ultimate Thames floater for me is the Jedward being chased by sharks for Sharknado.
Yeah.
I think if you can kind of make fun of yourself a little bit with it, then it sort of works better rather than taking it too seriously.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm glad we got Sharknado into this podcast eventually.
It's about time.
It is about time. I do think that sometimes doesn't mean that you can't have creativity within these campaigns. I think that's worth saying. I mean, I know there was quite a good campaign for, it was an environmental group, where they used a sinking house in the Thames to sort of signify rising sea levels. So they used the format as part of the campaign message. So I don't think it's necessarily an idea devoid of originality and creative ideas. Okay, that's all the time we have for this episode. Noise in Brief goes live every 2 weeks, but look out for our longer interview-based podcast, Beyond the Noise, which comes out next week. Thank you to Eliza and Evie for your insights. Do check out prweek.com for all the latest news and all our great events too that are coming up in 2024. Before I go, I'm going to plug two fantastic PR Week award schemes, Best Places to Work and the Purpose Awards EMEA. Deadlines for both are Thursday this week, so don't delay. And if you've enjoyed today's episode, we'd love it if you could leave a review, please, wherever you access PR Week's Noise in Brief podcast. Okay, that's all for today. Thank you for listening. See you next time. Goodbye.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.